Out on the river, Ryder Courtney was giving his full attention to the steamer as he brought her into her mooring. He swung her nose into the current and held her there with a deft touch on the throttle, then eased the wheel over and let her drift sideways across the stream until her steel side kissed the matting fenders that hung down the side of the wharf. His crew tossed the mooring lines to the men on the jetty, who seized the ends and made her fast. Ryder rang the telegraph to the boiler room, and Jock McCrump stuck his head through the engine room hatch. His face was streaked with black grease.
"Aye, skipper."
"Keep ahead of steam on the boiler, Jock. Never know when we might need to run for it."
"Aye, skipper. I want none of them stinking savages as shipmates."
Jock wiped the grease from his huge calloused hands on a wad of cotton waste.
"You have the con,"
Ryder told him, and vaulted over the ship's rail to the jetty. He strode towards where General Gordon waited for him with his staff, but he had not gone a dozen paces before the crowd closed round him and he was trapped like a fish in a net. A struggling knot of Egyptians and other Arabs surrounded him, grabbing at his clothing.
"Effendi, please, Effendi, I have 10 children and 4 wives. Give us safe passage on your fine ship,"
they pleaded in Arabic and broken English. They thrust wads of banknotes into his face.
£100 Egyptian. It is all I have. Take it, Effendi, and my prayers for your long life will go up to Allah." "Gold sovereigns of your queen,"
another bid, and clinked the canvas bag he held like a tambourine. Women pulled off their jewellery, heavy gold bracelets, rings and necklaces with sparkling stones.
"Me and my baby, take us with you, great lord."
They thrust their infants at him, tiny squealing wretches, hollow-cheeked with starvation, some covered with the lesions and open sores of scurvy, their loincloth stained tobacco yellow with the liquid feces of cholera. They shoved and wrestled with each other to reach him. One woman was knocked to her knees and dropped her infant under the feet of the surging crowd. Its howls became weaker as they trampled it. Finally, a nail-shod sandal crushed the eggshell skull and the child was abruptly silent and lay still, an abandoned doll in the dust. Ryder Courtney gave a bellow of rage and laid about him with clenched fists. He knocked down a fat Turkish merchant with a single blow to the jaw, then dropped his shoulder and charged into the ruck of struggling humanity. They scattered to let him pass, but some doubled back towards the intrepid Ibis and tried to scramble across to her deck. Jock McCrump was at the rail to meet them, with a monkey wrench in his fat fist and 5 of his crew at his back, armed with boat hooks and fire axes. Jock cracked the skull of the first man who tried to board, and he fell into the narrow strip of water between the ship and the stone wharf, then disappeared beneath the surface. He did not rise again. Ryder realized the danger and tried to get back to his ship, but even he could not cleave his way through the close pack of bodies.
"Jock, take her off and anchor with the barges," he shouted.
Jock heard him above the uproar and waved the wrench in acknowledgement. He jumped to the bridge and gave a terse order to his crew. They did not waste time unmooring, but severed the lines to the shore with a few accurate strokes of the axes. The intrepid Ibis swung her bows into the current, but before she had steerage way, more of the refugees attempted to jump across the gap. 4 fell short and were whipped away downstream by the racing current. 1 grabbed hold of the ship's rail and dangled down her side, trying to lift himself aboard, imploring the crew above him for mercy. Bakshit, the Arab boatswain, stepped to the rail above him and with a single swing of his axe neatly lopped off the 4 fingers of the man's right hand. They fell to the steel deck like brown pork sausages. His victim shrieked and dropped into the river. Bakshit kicked the fingers over the side, wiped his blade on the skirt of his robe, then went to break out the bow anchor from its locker forward. Jock turned the steamboat out across the current and ran out to anchor at the head of the line of barges. A wail of despair went up from the crowd, but Ryder glowered at them, fists clenched. They had learnt exactly what that gesture presaged and backed away from him. In the meantime, General Gordon had ordered a squad of his soldiers to break up the riot. They advanced in a line with their bayonets fixed and used their rifle butts to club down any who stood in their way. The crowd broke before them and disappeared into the narrow alleys of the city. They left the dead baby with its bleeding mother wailing over it, and half a dozen moaning rioters sitting stunned in puddles of their own blood. The Turk, who Ryder had floored, lay quiescent on his back, snoring loudly. Ryder looked about for David and his daughters, but the consul had shown the good sense to get his family away to the safety of the palace at the first sign of rioting. He felt a lift of relief. Then he saw General Gordon coming towards him, stepping through the litter and bodies. "Good afternoon, General." "How do you do, Mr. Courtney? I'm pleased to welcome you. I hope you had a pleasant voyage." "Very enjoyable, sir. We made good passage through the Sud. The channel is well scoured out at this season. No necessity to kedge our way through." Neither deigned to remark on the gauntlet that the steamboat had run through the Dervish batteries, or the riot that had welcomed it to the city. "You are heavily laden, sir." Gordon, who was fully 6 inches shorter, looked up at Ryder with those remarkable eyes. They were the steely blue of the noonday sky above the desert. Few men who looked into them could forget them. They were hypnotic, compelling, the outward sign of Gordon's iron faith in himself and his God. Ryder understood the import of the question instantly. "I have 1,500 sacks of Dura sorghum in my barges, each bag of 10 cantars weight." A cantar was an Arabic measure, approximately 100 weight. Gordon's eyes sparkled like cut sapphires, and he slapped his cane against his thigh. "Well done indeed, sir. The garrison and the entire population are already on extremely short commons. Your cargo might well see us through until the relief column from Cairo can reach us." Ryder Courtney blinked with surprise at such an optimistic estimate. There were close to 30,000 souls trapped in the city. Even on starvation rations, that multitude would devour 100 sacks a day. The latest news they had received before the Dervish cut the telegraph line to the north was that the relief column was still assembling in the delta and would not be ready to begin the journey southwards for several weeks more. Even then they had more than 1,000 miles to travel to Khartoum. On the way they must navigate the cataracts and traverse the Mother of Stones, that terrible wilderness. Then they must fight their way through the Dervish hordes who guard the long marches through the banks of the Nile before they could reach the city and raise the siege. 1,500 sacks of Dura was not nearly enough to sustain the inhabitants of Khartoum indefinitely. Then he realized that Gordon's optimism was his best armor. A man such as he could never allow himself to face the hopelessness of their plight and give in to despair. He nodded his agreement. "Do I have your permission to begin sales of the grain, General?" The city was under martial law. No distribution of food was allowed without Gordon's personal sanction. "Sir, I cannot allow you to distribute the provisions. The population of my city is starving." Ryder noted Gordon's use of the possessive. "If you were to sell them, they would be hoarded by wealthy merchants to the detriment of the poor. There will be equal rations for all. I will oversee the distribution. I have no choice but to commandeer your entire cargo of grain. I will, of course, pay you a fair price for it." For a moment, Ryder stared at him speechless. Then he found his voice. "A fair price, General?" "At the end of the last harvest, the price of Dura in the souks of this city was 6 shillings a sack." "It was a fair price, and still is, sir." "At the end of the last harvest, there was no war and no siege," Ryder retorted. "General, 6 shillings does not take into account the extortionate price I was forced to pay, nor does it compensate me for the difficulties I experienced in transporting the sorghum and the fair profit to which I am entitled." "I am certain, Mr. Courtney, that 6 shillings will return you a handsome profit." Gordon stared at him hard. "This city is under martial law, sir, and profiteering and hoarding are both capital crimes." Ryder knew that the threat was not an idle one. He had seen many men flogged or summarily executed for any dereliction of their duty or defiance of this little man's decrees. Gordon unbuttoned the breast pocket of his uniform jacket and brought out his notebook. He scribbled in it swiftly, tore out the sheet, and passed it to Ryder. "That is my personal promissory note for the sum of 450 Egyptian pounds. It is payable at the treasury of the Khedive in Cairo," he said briskly. The Khedive was the ruler of Egypt. What is the rest of your cargo, Mr. Courtney? Ivory, live wild birds and animals, Ryder replied bitterly. Those you may offload into your godown. At this stage I have no interest in them, although later it may be necessary to slaughter the animals to provide meat for the populace. How soon can you have your steamer and the barges ready to depart, sir? Depart, General? Ryder turned pale under his tan. He had sensed what was about to happen. I am commandeering your vessel for the transport of refugees downriver, Gordon explained. You may requisition what cordwood you need to fuel your boilers. I will reimburse you for the voyage at the rate of £2 per passenger. I estimate you might take 500 women, children, and heads of families. I will personally review the needs of each and decide who is to have priority. You will pay me with another note, General? Ryder asked with veiled irony. Precisely, Mr. Courtney. You will wait at Matema until the relief force reaches you. My own steamers are already there. Your famed skill as a river pilot will be much in demand in the passage of the Shabluka Gorge, Mr. Courtney. Chinese Gordon despised what he looked upon as greed and the worship of mammon. When the Khedive of Egypt had offered him a salary of £10,000 to undertake this most perilous assignment of evacuating the Sudan, Gordon had insisted that this be reduced to £2,000. He had his own perception of duty to his fellow men and his god. "Please bring your barges alongside the jetty, and my troops will guard them while they are offloaded, and the Dara is taken to the customs warehouse. Major Al-Farouk of my staff will be in command of the operation." Gordon nodded to the Egyptian officer at his side, who saluted Ryder perfunctorily. Al-Farouk had soulful dark eyes and smelt powerfully of hair pomade. "And now you must excuse me, sir. I have much to attend to."